kind of introduced the idea of bosonization in high energy community. And I should also mention Witten, who did the non-abelian generalization of that, and that was a genuinely new piece of work. In higher than one dimension, of course, it's much harder to do bosonization. There are various attempts, but I understand that it's not quite a completely settled issue. I should start by mentioning Luther, who had the first idea of the radial bosonization in momentum space, in the momentum Fermi surface. And there was subsequent work by Houghton and Marston, and especially Dan Kalhalden, who is today here, and somewhat related work by Kleshenko, and also Castro, Netto, and Fradkin, quite related to the work of Duncan. Well, my take in it was motivated by my involvement in non-commutative field theory, and it's kind of a phase-based approach that uses the techniques from non-commutative field theory. And the three questions, of course, is, does it work? Is it really correct? Is it really new? How does it compare with existing work? And can we do anything with it? Is it useful? And we'll see how far we get on this. So there are a couple of different starting points to expose what I'm going to tell you, but I decided to take the one that appears most intuitive and most physically motivated, and that's a semi-classical phase-based droplet picture. So to set the idea, we will be talking about a collection of n, a many-body system consisting of n fermions. These fermions, for most of this talk, will be considered non-interacting. They will be in some external potential, but otherwise they will not interact. Interactions can be added later, but I want to lay out the formalism in this particularly simple situation. And they are in d-dimension, so their phase space, coordinates and momenta, is 2D-dimensional. And I will use the notation phi with an index mu running over 2D values for the phase space, for the single particle phase space. This could very well be coordinates and momenta, but I may choose to choose any other phase-based coordinates that I want. And the Poisson brackets, the classical Poisson brackets, will be denoted theta mu nu. Actually, I will to make the presentation easier, I will choose Darboux coordinates, like the ordinary coordinates and momenta, in which case the theta mu nu is just 1 and minus 1. And of course, we have the standard definition of Poisson brackets. I don't think this is focused, of Poisson brackets in the classical phase space, defined like that. Well, now we want to consider several particles, many particles. And in such a phase space, I can only draw two dimensions here, these particles would correspond to all these dots that you see. If you have many such particles, you can effectively describe them in terms of their phase space density rho, which is a function of phi phase space, it's the number of particles per unit area. And it's simply the smooth limit of the point-wise delta function density that you can write like that. Now, the system evolves in time, it has Hamiltonian, etc. And you might want to describe it in terms of looking at each individual particle, you might want to describe it in terms of the evolution of that function rho. So you must know the Poisson brackets of that function rho. It is its own phase space, as well as the Hamiltonian. So I will write the Poisson brackets of rho at a point phi to a point phi prime with the indices ft for field theory to stress the point that this is not the same as the Poisson brackets over single particle states. And it acquires this form. I believe it is well known, but I will motivate it. So it is simply, it looks like classical, the single particle Poisson brackets in phase phi between the function rho of phi and a delta function at phi and phi prime. Now, why is it like that? Well, if you choose test functions, if you integrate this field rho phi with a classical fixed function f of phi, that gives you a number. This number will have Poisson brackets with a number obtained with a different test function. And that Poisson bracket is simply the test function single particle f Poisson bracket g integrated over rho. So this simply elevates the Poisson, the single particle Poisson brackets at the level of field theory. Well, the same, of course, Poisson bracket can be written in terms of the Fourier modes of this field. You may wish to Fourier transform each and every phase space coordinate. So there are momenta that are dual to coordinates and real momenta, there are wave numbers, I mean. And in terms of that, that achieves this famous k cross k prime form, where k cross k prime is simply the cross product of the two vectors k and k prime with the form theta mu nu contracting them. And finally, that's fine, we now have the Poisson brackets for that field row, but we should also have the Hamiltonian. The Hamiltonian is what you expect, is the sum of all the single particle Hamiltonians, which is simply the test function corresponding to the single particle Hamiltonian function phi. If you take rho and integrate, that simply adds all the energies of particles. And if you want to find the equations of motion of rho, you simply calculate the field theory Poisson brackets of the field theory Hamiltonian of rho itself. That is, of course, the evolution of rho as implied by this structure. But it is consistent with the evolution of underlying particles. That means if you consider that each underlying particle evolves, it flows into this diagram according to its own single particle equation of motion, that implies a corresponding evolution for that density, and that evolution is what you get in this language. So if you wish, it's a change of language. Okay.
This Peter is just doing like standard commutation relations between momentum.
I will choose Darboux coordinates, which means that the phis are either ordinary coordinates and momenta, in which case the theta is just 1 minus 1, 1 minus 1, etc., between each pair, or any other phase space coordinates that have a similar property. Does that answer your question? So this theta is the usual symplectic. Yeah, it's an off-diagonal thing with 1s and minus 1s. It's the simplest thing. Well, how are we going to use this for bosonization or for quantum mechanics, for that matter? Well, there comes the semi-classical picture of fermions as a kind of droplet in phase space. So let's consider spinless fermions, well, double S here, I'm sorry, spinless fermions and also non-interacting, and let's look at them in the semi-classical approximation. What does it mean? It means that you can still view each fermion, roughly speaking, being somewhere on the phase space plane. Of course, it won't be a point anymore because of the uncertainty. It would be some fuzzy thing. And we know that semi-classically, the phase space becomes now kind of encodes the Hilbert space of the system. And there is one single particle Hilbert space state per area 2 pi h, per area h, which is 2 pi h bar, to the number of dimensions. The exclusion principle, no spin, remember, the exclusion principle tells us that you cannot put two or more such fermions too close to each other. You can put at most one per such area. So the densest collection of fermions that you may want to form, if you try to bring them as close to the origin, say, as possible to minimize the energy or something, the best that you can do is to completely fill a region in phase space with one particle per such area. So this semi-classical configuration that for some reason in analogy with the quantum Hall effect I call droplet has a density rho zero inside and a density zero outside. Rho is simply a theta function. It simply tells you that it's rho zero inside, rho zero being one over the quantum of phase space area times some theta function. And it has a boundary. And of course, because nothing else is relevant here, the boundary, this line here in this two-dimensional graph, is what parametrizes the actual state that I write. You may say, but this is a very special state. You may have fermions flying all over the place. Let's start with a configuration that you have simply lumped together the fermions as much as you can. They form a droplet, and all you can do is simply deform it a little bit and see where we get. Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. If you want to think of it in coordinate space, think of the lowest Landau level, where indeed it is the phase space. But I'm not talking about the lowest Landau level specifically. I'm talking about phase space, X and P. So this is really a droplet in phase space. For instance, if you wanted to minimize the energy, you would fill an area consisting of as little single particle energy as possible. Therefore, this surface here would correspond to a constant single particle energy, and you feel everything inside it if the energy is kind of a decreasing function. And that energy, of course, would be the Fermi energy, the semi-classical version of the Fermi energy. Now I want to parameterize that, so I choose to parameterize the boundary. You can do it in any way you wish. But my way of parameterizing the boundary will be to say, look, this is a 2D minus 1 dimensional surface in a 2 dimensional space. So that means that I can single out any single phase space coordinate that I want. Let's call it phi 1. And that phase space coordinate will have a fixed value at the boundary that will depend on the rest of them. So here I could have chosen, say, P. And for each point x, p has a specific value. Or I would have chosen any other phase space coordinate that I want. And the value of that coordinate is some function r of the remaining phase space coordinate. That I will call my boundary field. Well, just to complete this picture, I here point out that the ground state would correspond to the boundary field r that solves this equation. That means the single particle energy is constant along the boundary, as I said. And for convenience, for later convenience, I take the remaining 2D minus 1 phase space coordinates, and in notation I decompose them into sigma, which is the canonical conjugate to phi 1, and the rest. The rest is this kind of script or non-script phi, whatever, non-descript phi, which is a 2D minus 2 residual phase space. So phi 1 commutes with all the other phis, but phi 1 and sigma has canonical some brackets equal 1. The question is, of course, now, but as the droplet evolves, this will be my dynamical variable. This will start wiggling in phase space. So I need to know its canonical structure. I need to know the Poisson brackets of R with itself, because that's the only dynamical variable of the theory, and of course the Hamiltonian. In principle, this is a problem of Hamiltonian reduction. Why? We know the Poisson brackets of generic fields rho phi. We know the Poisson brackets of that field. Now, what I say is that I restrict the form of such fields rho to be of the droplet form. That means to be specifically of the form that are constant inside a domain and zero outside of that domain. And I need to project the canonical structure from the full space of functions to that space of restricted functions. Now, that's easily said, but not so easily done. I have not seen this problem solved anywhere in the literature, although I looked, but of course I could be wrong. Inform me if it was done before. But I had to do it myself, and this is the answer. So the Poisson bracket of rho of the boundary field R with itself, which again I write Ft to stress that this is the Poisson bracket of a field, is rho 0 times that, so I put rho 0 to the left-hand side, and it has two terms. One is a delta function, is a delta function over the residual phase space variables at the two points, times the delta prime, the derivative of a delta function, over the conjugate phase space variable to R that became the boundary field. And the rest is a delta function over the conjugate variable times a single particle Poisson bracket R with a delta. So this is kind of a mixed Poisson bracket, because this part should be reminiscent of a current algebra. It has a delta function and delta prime, and that's usually characteristic of a U1 current algebra. But this has a similar structure, model of that delta function, as a density, rho, phase space density function, but in the residual phase space. The Hamiltonian is what it used to be before. It's simply the integral of the sum of single particle energies, and that is written like that in terms of this field. You just integrate over the domain of the droplet. And the equation of motion of R, the classical equation of R, can be found by Poisson bracketing this Hamiltonian with R itself using this field theory commutator. And this is consistent with the evolution of that surface, as this surface would evolve because of the evolution of the underlying particles. In particular, if I take a particle that lies just at the boundary of the surface, this particle will start moving. So this particle will simply drag this surface with itself, and the surface at a later time t is simply the surface that you obtain by taking each particle here and evolving it according to the single particle equation of motion. By Liouville's theorem, the density inside will remain constant and equal to rho zero, and therefore this is just an evolution of the droplet without spoiling its form. And that equation, I won't show you the detail, is actually reproduced by this Poisson bracket. Well, in the particular case that we are in one spatial dimension, there is no residual phase space. 2d minus 2 is zero, and therefore R is only a function of some conjugate variable of phi 1, which I call sigma, and this Poisson bracket is simply an abelian current algebra. This already should be smelling like ordinary D equal 1 bosonization, and that will be the chiral field, actually the derivative of the chiral field that bosonizes the sectors in one dimension. I should also mention that, of course, you may say this is kind of a naive description because the droplet could be complicated. You may have several components, or you may have configurations in which the droplet kind of winds like that, and any particular coordinate would find the boundary at various points, etc. All this can be dealt with by simply taking various copies of that field. For instance, in the case, say, that X is like that and the droplet spans a domain across the positive and negative momentum, and I choose X to be my residual coordinate, then there are two points, R plus and R minus. Each one of these boundaries is an independent boundary field. They mutually Poisson commute, and altogether they describe the system. If, of course, they join here, then I will have some joining condition, etc., etc. Okay, so let's go from classical to quantum. This is a nice classical description for such configurations, but how do you quantize? Well, we know how to quantize systems. You say if I have Poisson brackets, I simply turn them into commutators. I just proclaim them to be 1 over I h bar times the quantum commutators. That works usually for single particle or few particle situations, but it doesn't quite work here, and the reason should be, again, well known to people doing phase-based stuff, but let me review it. Let's go back to rho of phi. Remember, the full phase-space density of particles without any droplet restrictions or anything in two-dimensional phase space. Quantization, we know what it means. It means that each underlying particle becomes quantum, so a hat will denote quantized operators now. And of course, the Poisson brackets become Heisenberg-type commutators between canonical pairs, which stands I h bar. Rho hat, then, which is still a function on some classical variable phi, but it's a quantum operator because it refers to underlying quantum particles, would be the sum of delta functions of phi minus phi hat. Phi is, again, the variable of this function. Phi hat are quantum operators. That's where this hat comes from. And I put here a quotation mark because this delta function is not really well defined. Why? Because phi is both coordinates and momenta, and when you put those in a function, you should specify the ordering. You could choose any ordering you wish to define whatever operator you like, but it's customary and convenient to choose the vial, the fully symmetric ordering. That means whenever you see a function which is x times p classically, you turn it into the product of xp plus px over 2, and similarly for all monomials. This means that when you have this function, or better, the Fourier transform in phase space, 2D Fourier variables k, this, it would be e to the minus I k dot phi I classically, becomes exactly the same expression quantum mechanically, where these phis, p's and q's are all summed in the exponent, and that automatically gives you vial ordering. This has the extra advantage that makes this function Hermitian, or rather that Fourier transform function Hermitian, which you like. Well, after you do that, of course, you can calculate based on that the Poisson brackets of rho, and you see that you get the commutators of rho, and you see that you get a deformation of the commutators of the Poisson brackets, which is the famous sine algebra. Now, I understand that it was first derived as the algebra of density in the low Landau level by Girvin, it was? McDonald, right? It was later rediscovered by high-energy people, as usual. And to be fair to them, I think it was my friend Cosmas Zachos and other people. To be fair to them, they didn't just derive it for a specific system. They just asked, what is the most general nonlinear algebra that involves kind of multidimensional indices that satisfies the Jacobi identities? And they ended up rediscovering that. But that's the same as the old Moyal algebra, if you wish. So all that was known in some, and it was later also called the W infinity algebra, as Andrea Capelli will tell us. It's simply the same algebra in a different basis. It's in the polynomial basis rather than the Fourier basis. Never mind. Let's just call it the quantum density, quantum phase space density algebra. And if you want now to Fourier transform that into ordinary phase space coordinates, you get the Poisson brackets is IH bar times, not quite the Poisson, the class, the single particle Poisson bracket of the function rho phi and the function delta of phi minus phi prime with respect to phi as it was before, but some kind of deformation of that, which is the famous Brenneral-Moyal algebra or bracket between two functions. And here is, of course, the place where the non-commutative stuff starts appearing. So I will spend one transparency just to review. We won't need really much of that, but just so that we know what we're talking about. So the reason why I need non-commutative geometry here is that you say, why do you talk about non-commutative geometry? Don't you just talk about quantum operators? Yes, but I want to stress that what I have here is an operation that does not act on quantum operators. It's an operation, this kind of star-Moyal bracket that I will define in a moment, does not act on some quantum variable. It's not the commutator of some quantum variables. It acts on the variable phi itself. And phi is simply an index. It's a classical variable of the quantized field rho. So I would like to put that in the proper context. Well, usually non-commutative geometry refers to coordinates of space, x, y, etc., that do not commute. They have non-trivial commutators, which are put equal to theta. But here, just to fix the idea, let's call it h bar to have full correspondence with quantum mechanics. So whenever you have classical phase space, you can quantize it. Whenever you have a classical function on the phase space, you can, of course, map it to a quantum operator. And ordering problems are fixed by fixing a specific ordering, which I will take again to be the Weyl ordering. But what's interesting is that you can also go back. Any quantum operator can be uniquely mapped to a classical function on phase space. How do you do that? Well, first of all, you take this operator and you express it as a function of x and p. X and p is a complete set of operators for the irreducible representations of the Heisenberg algebra. Therefore, you can do that for any operator f hat. After you do that, you take that operator in terms of x and p and Weyl reorder it. That means if it's not Weyl ordered the way that you wrote it, just Weyl reorder all the terms at the expense of picking up more and more terms. And after you are done, that function you map back to a classical function by dropping the hats. There is an explicit way of doing that in terms of Fourier transforms that I wrote here, but never mind. Ordinary commutative derivatives become simply commutators with p and x of the operator f. Integration over the plane becomes simply trace times the quantum of area. And finally, if you have two operators, f hat and g hat, that correspond, according to this recipe, to two functions f and g, and you multiply them, the product is a new operator that maps to a new function. This new function, we call it f star g. So f star g is some classical operation between the functions f and g that mimics the effect of multiplying the corresponding operators. Finally, if you form the usual commutator between these two operators and divide by IH bar, that corresponds to some new function that you call the star product, or the star bracket, or the Moyal bracket between these two functions. So that's all there is to it. You can even write more explicit expressions. So the Moyal bracket is this star commutator, as we call it, and you can do it by starting with this exponential of derivatives with respect to coordinates and momenta, where you take the two functions at two different points of phase space. These coordinates and momenta refer to either one or the other. And after you expand this operator and you do all these derivatives, eventually you let x1 and p1 go to x2 and p2. This star product and the corresponding Moyal bracket is non-local. That means it's not a point-wise operation. To know the star product of two functions at a point, you really need to know the full neighborhood of the value of the functions on a full neighborhood around that point. There is some famous UV to ultraviolet to infrared mapping. If your operator here if your function here becomes very peaked, very narrow, like a delta function, the corresponding operator becomes very non-local in Hilbert space. It maps all states to all other states, and so on. And here, yes?
If star g should be defined in the graph of the theorem,
that's fine. My h bar here is the non-commutativity parameter. So this star product involves explicitly a non-commutative parameter. It's a deformation of the classical Poisson bracket, which involves some deformation parameter. That deformation parameter I will take to be h bar. Okay? No, the limit, yes it is. H bar to 0 will give you, when you take this star product defined for a non-zero h bar, and you take h bar to 0, that will go over to the standard Poisson bracket, as you see from here. Because the first term will cancel because of the asymmetry. The next order in h bar is the standard Poisson bracket if you act here and there. And when you divide by h bar, that will survive and everything else will die.
The only object on the left-hand side, which is
dependent
on
h
bar, is
this guy. Exactly. Yeah. So, okay, here I had a note that do not confuse rho hat with phi hat. That is, the quantum, the truly quantum thing in this business is the field itself. Rho is a quantum field. This is a field on some classical phase space phi. That means it depends. It has an index phi, and all these operations will happen on this. Okay, how do we quantize the droplet field? Now we have to take a clue from what we said before, that you realize that once your particles are quantum, there is no really sharp droplet. The droplet becomes kind of smooth at the end, so the boundary becomes fuzzy, and it's also fluctuating because of quantum effect. So that's the closest to stochastic geometry that I'm going to get in this talk, but I thought I should mention it. So effectively, what you want to do is take your classical boundary field R and turn it into an operator, and that's the quantum boundary field. But the quantum boundary field's Poisson brackets were partly current and partly density. The current part was this kind of delta prime part that in one dimension is the only thing that survives. And we know from previous experience that upon quantization that does not get deformed. While the density part, we just saw that it must be deformed. So here is what I propose. I propose that the correct, in quotation marks, commutation relations of the field are at two different points, are the quantum version of the C number term of the U1 part, if you wish, which involves delta primes and delta and the residual phase space, plus the remaining thing, which is a Moyal bracket in the residual phase space, the 2D minus 2 remaining phase space variables between R itself and a delta function. My claim now is that this quantum algebra fully describes the many-body Hilbert space of the fermions. That means it has a unique irreducible representation, which is into one correspondence with the Hilbert space of fermion excitations above some kind of Fermi C. And you can calculate the spectrum of that theory by taking the Hamiltonian, which was, I remind you, the integral of the single particle Hamiltonian over the droplet, and integrating it over the quantum droplet. That means the droplet where one of the coordinates is this quantum operator R. So that's what you would get. That's something that is an integration of a classical function, but the boundary, one of the boundaries of integration is quantum. So it becomes a quantum operator. And these quotation marks here have to do with the fact that this needs a specific ordering. And that's one of the subtleties. Let's see how this happens. Let's get a flavor of why you expect this to happen or how it is that it will happen. It is convenient to map this to things with which we are more familiar to change basis. So I will perform something like a change of basis between my classical variable phi and some indices. So think of it as a peculiar kind of Fourier transform. What do you do? Well, you take any function f. So this works not just for quantum fields, for any function on a set of variables phi. Phi is my non-commutative space, right? and to that map a kind of matrix, a kind of FAB, which is obtained by integrating this function of phi with a set of test functions CAB that depend on two indices. And this test of this set of test functions CAB are nothing but the single particle quantum elements of some kind of basis operators in the single particle quantum space, integrated accordingly so that you go from Fourier modes to phi. So e to the minus I came that phi dot, that's a single particle operator, that's a quantum X and P if you wish. You choose any single particle orthonormal basis on that Hilbert space. It could be oscillator modes, it could be plane waves, whatever you want. Calculate this matrix element. This is now just a function of that unique parameter K. And Fourier transform back to phi, and that will define that function. You contract with that function, it gives you some symbol F depending on these two indices. So I could do that transformation to my quantum field. I still get a quantum field in a new parameterization of phi. I trade phi for this doublet of indices. And also to make it look even better, I consider that the sigma, the variable conjugate to phi 1 that became r, is periodic. This simply means that my droplet is compact and I choose a particular kind of variable that runs around one cycle of the droplet. This is most generically the case. Then, if I take the Poisson brackets that I postulated before, or that I argued before, commutation relation that I argued before, and I translate in this new basis, I get this. This first thing we still recognize. Oh, by the way, N and M now are the Fourier modes of sigma, and the indices A, B, and C, D is the trades that I had from the residual phase space. So this residual 2D minus 2 phase space was traded for a set of indices. A and B run over infinite values. So that commutator now looks like this bit, which is again a current algebra, and you can say that it's kind of an abelian current algebra because it's n times a delta function of n plus m, so it picks the n and my, where m is minus n, times delta of a d delta of b c, so it's a point, almost pointwise in the matrix space here, but it's also this part over here. And maybe this is not immediately recognizable, but this is of a Kac-Moody type. This is how a Kac-Moody algebra over a kind of infinite group would look, where this is the central extension of the algebra, and this is the term that corresponds to the group structure. So that's like a U-infinity, infinite component Kac-Moody algebra. And Kac-Moody algebras, as we know, must have a central extension. That's the coefficient of that term. That term comes out to be 1. I didn't choose that. I didn't put it in. It came out of the calculation as I started from the classical droplet and proceeded to quantize the system. So that means that you know in principle how to find representations of this algebra. They will be kind of Verma moduli with respect to some vacua that are annihilated by all the positive modes of this operator, while they will transform under some kind of representation under the zero mode, and that will classify the various towers of states. But this is now something that we basically understand. I worked out explicitly a very simple example. Consider a two-dimensional gas, non-interacting gas, Fermi gas in a harmonic trap. So the many-body system is explicitly solvable. This is the Hamiltonian with all frequencies scaled to 1 for convenience. So the particles are in two dimensions in a rotationally symmetric and harmonic potential. Of course, the single particle spectrum is known. You quantize the X and Y oscillator separately, and you have occupation numbers NX and NY, or N1 and N2. And you find the many body states by simply filling or not filling each dot in this diagram. The energy is additive in N1 and N2, and therefore the Fermi C is the one that you get by filling all the states in a triangle and leaving everything else empty. Of course, your number of fermions N is fixed. You don't have it at will to fix as you wish. So when you start filling this C and you end up with this last set of degenerate levels, all these levels are the same Fermi energy, you may or may not have enough to fill them completely. So let's say that after you do that, you're left with big M particles here, and there are K states here, so your Fermi level is basically K. You have a degeneracy of the ground state, which is K plus 1 over M. If this is K, they are K plus 1 such state, and you can place them wherever you wish. So the ground state is degenerate. Excited states are found by taking now some of these particles or further down and exciting them outside. And in each particular case, you can calculate the degeneracy. Well, I crank the machinery that I showed you, and I knew that I wouldn't have enough time, so that I didn't give any details here, but if you're interested, you can see them. I crank the machinery that I gave you. That means I write down the algebra for the R operator in this particular case, starting from from the phase space representation of such a Fermi C. I also write the Hamiltonian, which in this case is quadratic, so it has no ordering ambiguities, so it basically takes a form more or less like that. And I calculate the representations, and lo and behold, one by one, it reproduces exactly the spectrum and the degeneracies of that problem. And when I say exactly, I mean, first of all, the ground state has the proper degeneracy, and this index M corresponds to the primary field that corresponds to the representation of the ground state. You know that when you have a UK plus 1, K plus 1 is the number of states here, you know that the vacuum can transform, and for K equal 1 will transform under a fully anti-symmetric representation of UK plus 1 up to K. So you get an exact correspondence with a different vacuum, if you wish, with a different ground states according to this integer M, but also all the excited states map. Modulo 1 effect. The effect is that if you start depleting your Fermi C, that means if you start exciting fermions so that whole patches of the Fermi C become depleted and there are no more states here and here, this formulation doesn't see it. That should not be too surprising, because that's a feature of standard bosonization as well. Standard bosonization is a field theory, and it reproduces the excited states of a Fermi system, but it believes that it has an infinite Fermi C. It doesn't stop where the Fermi C is depleted, and in particular, it can tell you that there are non-perturbative corrections which are not taken into account. Same here, same disease, if you wish. The total fermion number, which is of course a constant, is a Casimir. The integral of that field, you can show that it commutes with everything in the algebra, and therefore it's a Casimir. It's basically the U1 charge of this algebra. And here I have some details on how I did the calculation, but I don't want to bother you. I didn't choose X and P as my canonical coordinates, but I choose radial coordinates. I choose the angle between X and P and the radius square, X square plus P square, which is convenient for harmonic oscillator. Well, so this seems to work, at least in this simple situations, but how does it compare with previous methods? This method in spirit and also in formalism comes closest to the method proposed by some 15 years ago, it was also, by Duncan here, and also a couple of years later by Castro, Neto, and Fradkin in a related work. So let me give you a brief preview of what that method is and how the two compare. So basically what Duncan said, that for a dense system, you can assign a value to the Fermi, surface. What do you call it? I usually call Fermi surface in phase space. What do you call it when it's just in momentum space? That's the real Fermi surface. Okay. So this Fermi surface, as we understand it, that means to the momentum of the particles, you can assign such a value locally for each point of space. That's, of course, an approximation, but that's what we do. So for each point of space X, you have some kind of Fermi surface K, which is now entirely in momentum space. And then you start deforming it, and you consider now your system to the dynamical degrees of the system to be the deformations of that Fermi surface, which I have drawn here. The parameterization of the Fermi surface is in terms of some equilibrium Fermi vector K0 at point X, which is what I have here, this dark curve, plus some variation delta K. But of course, if the variation delta K is tangential to the surface, you're not really deforming it at all. Only the normal deformation is a true degree of freedom. This tangential one is kind of like a gauge degree of freedom that corresponds to the parameterizations of this surface. So after you take this delta k and you write it as the transverse and the tangential part, the tangential part is a gauge part, and you can work out the commutation relation of this deviation in some approximation, very similar to what Tomonaga did, and you end up with this type of commutation relation. So it looks a bit complicated. It involves kind of a covariant derivative here. This is simply a derivative along the radial direction because the other directions are not relevant. And it has a delta function over all space variables, a d-dimensional delta function, and a delta function over d minus 1 momentum variables because it's a delta function essentially over that surface. Yeah. But by just looking at it, I point out that the geometry is essentially the same with the situation that I do. The parameterization is different, but the geometry is the same because this is again a 2d minus 1 dimensional surface. For every point in space, you have a d minus 1 surface in momentum, so you put it all together and that's your 2d minus 1 dimensional phase space surface, the droplet surface. And I also claim that this commutator is exactly the C number part of the previous boundary R hat commutator that I showed you. It's not terribly obvious because the variables are a bit different, and also this looks different. The difference between the two is basically a matter of parameterization. For instance, if you start with the way that I parameterize things, in which case this looks simpler, and you choose as your variable R to be this radial deviation, that means you choose this to be your phase space variable that will parameterize your surface, you then identify its conjugate, which is actually n times x if you work it out, and then the residual phase space, and you plug it into that formula, you recover that. This formula, of course, is covariant. It's written by Duncan in exactly the way that would make it covariant under reparameterizations of this reference surface, and also to take care of the fact that only these are the true degrees of freedom. So is the R commutator, and that's not entirely obvious to see. It should be obvious from the formulation that I started from a phase space and I picked coordinates and did my work. But if you want to see it explicitly, yes, you can change variables and see that it's also covariant. If you go to new phase space variables and you re-express your R field in terms of the new variables, it becomes the same form as before. So this is an explicitly covariant form. The other one was an effectively covariant form, but kind of simpler looking. The difference between the two formulations is, of course, in this Moyal part, in this linear in the field R part in my commutation relation, which is not present here. So what does that do for you? What is the difference that it creates? Well, for one thing, it fuzzifies this residual phase space. Notice that here everything is an ordinary delta function, so this is a modulo of this derivative. This is a pointwise Poisson bracket between these two k's, while the other one was not pointwise because of this fuzzy structure. It was non-local in the residual phase space. And another subtlety here is that because this is a pointwise function in x and the residual k variables, it contains too many degrees of freedom. So to really capture the degrees of freedom that you want, you have to do patches, and you consider this commutation relation patchwise, etc. My claim is that the effective fuzzification of the phase space that this linear part in the commutator achieves is dispenses with the need for patches. That means you take that algebra, you quantize it without cutting it into patches, and you do get the correct quantum states for the many-body system. Also, finally, because it's non-local, it effectively couples fermions across different points of the Fermi C. And of course, here you do have couplings of fermions between different momenta at the same point, but fermions at different points of space still do not couple. There you have a couple. I'm sorry?
I mean, this is perhaps a central technical point, and I think you're about to kind of sweep everything under the rug. I mean, the issue is what the fuzzification scale is and what the physical thing is. You're imposing a harmonic oscillator structure in your example, which gives a real space, a length scale in real space that can finally If it's done by the boxes, you get this kind of discrete phase space. In my view, at the moment, it should be the the inelastic scattering length. But what is your proposal for
that? Yeah, the fuzzification that comes out of the formalism is essentially the quantum cell on the residual phase space.
Yeah, but that is completely dependent on box or whatever you contend. You're getting fuzziness in K space only because you're getting fuzziness on the transverse on the Fermi surface only because you're confining things in a.
Not really. I don't think so.
What is the fuzziness parameter?
Let's take.
What is the length scale in K space then?
Let's take. D coordinates and D momenta, and let's take one of the momenta to be my boundary field. Its corresponding coordinate is the sigma field, and it doesn't.
That's a formal answer. What is providing the length scale?
H bar. Yes, because it's a.
H bar is not a unit.
That's right. This is a cell, if you wish, a fuzzy cell in phase space. It's in K together with X, so you can squeeze it in X and expand it in K.
Yeah, but you're confining X. Well, harmonic well, which is not present in the Fermi field, the uniform Fermi field. The only length scale that you're getting as analog to the world is a box size. You're putting it in, and that gives you the discrete, that gives you the 2 pi over L.
Well,
this is the one crucial point.
So
don't skip over it.
No, I'm not going to skip over it.
So what is the answer?
The answer is that the algebra only knows about the non-commutative structure of the residual phase space. It doesn't care about the size of the phase space. It just tells you that if you take an x, a residual x and a residual p, the remaining k is.
What is the quantum length in k on the Fermi surface?
The quantum length of the Fermi surface? There is no a priori length on the Fermi surface. There is
only h bar. So what is the Fermi scale on the Fermi surface? In
you want to have the K Fermi surface, right? The momentum Fermi surface.
We're talking about the Fermi.
Okay, that would have to come out of a box, but the algebra.
Over L.
Right, but the algebra does not need to, the algebra and the Hamiltonian do not need to know it explicitly.
No, but that's the crucial point, and that's not answered by your formula.
Maybe I don't understand the crucial point.
The crucial point is, I guess you have something like Lois lambda levels, which are kind of fuzziness transverse on the Fermi surface, a length scale in K over which.
Right.
In your example with the harmonic oscillator, you're localizing things in real space by the size of the well, and that gives you the fuzziness. Oh. When you go to the uniform system, the big system in the box, you're getting back to the discretization in
case basis. Right. So the fact that the fuzziness that I have does not depend on the strength of the harmonic oscillator potential does not at least partially answer.
No, it's the quantum scale of the potential. It's the
that's in the Hamiltonian, not in the
But the representation of the algebra, not in the algebra.
No, I understand all the algebra issues. What is the fuzzy parameter on the Fermi surface? You can answer that question. What is the length scale over which the analog of the magnetic length?
Okay, if you have
it's
put
H-bar,
no, it's not H bar. Okay, yeah. If you have put your particle in a box, then your fuzzy space, of course, has become a cylinder, right? Momentum plus a cylinder. And we know that the representations of the non-commutative algebra in that will have some kind of discretization. That's
probably. If you put in a square box, you've got the fuzziness you're talking is 2 pi, the units of reciprocal vectors in which the wave number is quantized, so 2 pi over L, right? And then you've got the grid in K space at these points.
Right.
So that gets back to the whole difficulty of the patching and all these issues. So that's the question is, if you actually need to break the Fermi surface up and treat it as a continuous manifold, so wave packets near one quarter are smooth, they're continuous. The overlap between the wave packets is finite, there's a length scale in K space that you need to introduce now, which is the inverse of the localization in real space of a wave packet.
Well, let me.
That's a fundamental place in this construction. know the answer to that.
Okay.
It's a formal issue, but it's not
let me ask something else at the risk of lengthening the talk, but let's consider this as part of the question and answer. If I wanted to do what you did, but for a harmonic trap, would I have in that case to use a particular kind of patching of...
It wasn't a Fermi surface as defined in the case of a harmonic oscillator.
So there you would not be able to do it?
Waves.
So you would not be able to do it in that case?
Not a momentum space Fermi surface in a harmonic well problem.
So that would not be tractable using this method?
Of course it's tractable using that method, but it's not the problem of the Fermi surface.
But would you just then work with this at face value, or would you need to put some kind of patching?
That's the basic issue. The patching, the issue of how to break up the Fermi surface into different regions within the independent
variables. So in your case, would you be able to work with this without any patching, or you would need to introduce patches for a harmonic oscillator?
Make everything countable, and
right. So you would need to introduce some kind of patches, I imagine, right?
Right. And the question is how to do that in a clean way, and clearly a way that's actually continuous, not breaking up, not
right.
The way to do it. Something like the quantum.
Right. So at the risk,
it's a length scale.
Okay. At the risk of not satisfying you, I claim that I can do at least the harmonic oscillator case without patching anything in my commutation, without introducing anything.
Using a Fermi surface to patch in the harmonic oscillator case.
Well, I'm actually using the phase space Fermi surface, and that's how I start, right? I'm using the three-dimensional spherical Fermi surface in four-dimensional phase space in my case. Okay, I don't think I'm going to satisfy you, but I would really like to discuss it further. Let me just conclude here what's going on. So one issue is the issue of patches, which may or may not be satisfactory, that at least I don't think that I need to do them a priori in the commutation relation. Maybe it will come effectively as kind of discrete structure of non-commutative space, etc. But the other issue is the presence of this extra term and whether this extra term has any effects for you. Now, the trick with the harmonic oscillator is that you can show that this extra term, after you calculate your representations, when you calculate quantities, has no effect. That's one of the special features of the harmonic oscillator, that it's a quadratic expression in R, and the non-commutativity there does not play much of a role. However, in general and in principle, I expect this to matter, and I expect this to make some difference. And morally, if you take this operator R in terms of A, B, these A's and B's correspond to patches, but these patches come from the quantization of the underlying manifold. So maybe that's related to what you say, that effectively this patching will come out of the quantization of the phase, single particle phase space manifold, perhaps. Then the diagonal elements of these operators, roughly speaking, correspond to this deviation K transverse to the surface, but then the off-diagonal elements correspond to transitions from one point of the Fermi surface to a different point. That's the best that I can do in comparing the two. Well, I would like to conclude here by giving some conclusions. I have presented you my proposal. It is a modification, if you wish, of previous proposals containing a kind of non-commutative fuzzy generalization of the point-wise phase-space Fermi surface dynamics. It reproduces, of course, the standard V equal 1 bosonization, but that's expected because the issue with the residual phase space does not arise. It does seem to work correctly in solvable situations, which include what I presented you, the particle in a box, where this discretization, of course, of the single particle phase space will happen. It's part of the non-commutative dynamics of that phase space, if you wish. And there are some open questions that I would like to... First of all, I presented this kind of motivating it. It was started from a semi-classical picture, and then I quantized it, and I argued what's the right way to do it, and I got this. Is there a first principle derivation? I think yes, I'm working on this. In fact, I thought of presenting that instead, but I felt this was more physically motivated. To really be able to bosonize any fermionic system, including interactions, etc., we should have some full quantum mechanical expression in terms of the boundary field of the full of the phase space density operator, because that's kind of like a universal operator in terms of which you can write anything. That I'm working, and I don't know yet, but of course it's not easy. Another crucial question is, can you produce a fermion field? Can you do some kind of exponentiation of that field R, or rather the integral of R, including perhaps a particular string factor so that they anti-commute? That seems to be tricky. So here the answer is, I don't know. Can you introduce interactions as spin? Yes, in principle you can. There is no trouble, at least in principle, but of course you have to make sure that the dynamics are reproduced correctly, and that goes back to this question. And finally, is this useful for something? And that, I don't know. Thank you.
So, well, we have time maybe for one or two questions, or? Well, then I have a question. So when you, maybe that goes back to the issue that if you just look at just a Fermi C, right? And so you mentioned alpha or A, whatever, should play a role of the action momentum space that Duncan was
in phase space, really. But effectively, if you put the system in a box, effectively it will translate into a patch in momentum space, right? It's a patch in phase space. But if you make the space finite, then it implies a corresponding distance and moment. Okay. I'm sorry?
It's a patch in momentum space, not a patch in phase space. In Duncan's description, it's a patch in momentum space.
Right. Not in mine, certainly.
I see. But in your description, A was something that came from choosing some basis and how, what was it operationally?
Right. You start with a single particle phase space. Let's say that the residual phase space is two-dimensional. So we live in two spatial dimensions. One coordinate and one momentum are spatial. The momentum becomes my variable R. The coordinate becomes the conjugate variable sigma. And there are two more to deal with. Those two more are the ones that get fuzzified. So that would be a patch in X2 and P2, if you wish, which are variables in which are the quantum field depends. And they're still classical variables, but the dynamics of that field in that extra space involves a fuzziness that is encoded by this patchiness in terms of H bar. And that appears in the Poisson bracket.
Basically, the length of you want to take a large system limit, so the current boundary conditions are not an acceptable thing to give rise to fuzzification. Then the question is, what is the length? Basically, the fuzzification or whatever is coming from the fact you're really discussing wave packets of quasi-particles in a metal. And to my mind, having struggled with this problem for a long time, and my current view is that actually the classification factor, as you call it, well, that has to be the inelastic scattering length, which is a temperature dependent thing, because a quasi-particle wave packet can't meaningfully be, bigger than in real space than the inelastic scattering length, because so you have to make, so that will provide some kind of inverse length scale for fuzziness on the Fermi surface, but it's not a formal issue, and it's not solved by saying it's just the size of the box, and it's not the same as a harmonic well. There is something has to provide a length scale which essentially is a maximum size in real space of an acceptable wave packet.
But that's some physics input. Scattering length.
And I see that's.
That would be definitely relevant for interacting particles, right? If you talk about non-interacting particles, just for the sake of making sure that the counting is right, then do you need to introduce anything like that in that case?
We don't have a clean thermodynamic limit type formulation, because the length scale of the box which you're using gives rise finally to this kind of lattice, a cubic lattice of points in K-space, and that no longer fuzzy, that's like discrete little points that you're stuck on. And that leads to all the difficulties, right? So there has to be some ingredient to provide you the localization some real space localization length parameter, which gives you, which means you're working with space packet with wave packets in that length, which then of course are not points in K-space, but are fuzzy balls in K-space. So you need the magnetic length analog in K-space has to come from the H bar over the length scale of localization.
So what would be, let's say, what would be the definition of success in this business? If I
something that you can use to get something.
Exactly, I know that's last point, of course. But if it works for a particle in a two-dimensional periodic box, is that something that would move you, or is that something that would tell you that this is probably on the right track? Without doing anything.
You've got this lattice, and you've got this lattice that reflects the shape of the box. The k coordinates, the block vector, is quantized in the reciprocal vector of the box, and you have this called lattice in k space that reflects the shape of the container. You put this periodic container, I guess you put the thing in. I mean.
So you would like to do away altogether with.
It's not fuzzish.
Yeah. Well, in this commutation relation, it is fuzzy. There is still coupling. There is still coupling between nearby, between fields, so to speak, living at nearby k's. That's definitely true. There is this kind of coupling between the nearby values of k. So we can go over a little bit in detail if you wish.
Anyway, that's a fundamental technical difficulty, and it's not a formal issue.
Okay, maybe we should discuss that in private later. But thank you.